in the limelight. Lord Barwell, the former UK Prime Minister Theresa May's Chief of Staff, who held the office of Housing Minister in the year before the Grenfell Tower disaster on 14th of June 2017, is likely to face questioning over how he handled direct fire safety warnings from the London Fire Commissioner, Danny Cotton. We now present you an article written by Robert Booth. The piece is titled Grenfell Inquiry, Ex-Ministers and Serving Secretary of State to be Cross-Examined. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Four former UK ministers and a serving Secretary of State will be cross-examined this year in a potentially politically explosive climax to the four-year Grenfell Tower public inquiry. Eric Pickles, the former Secretary of State for Communities, Brandon Lewis, the current Northern Ireland Secretary, and the former Housing Minister Gavin Barwell will face hours of questioning over claims Conservative-led governments prioritised a bonfire of red tape over safety. Senior politicians are likely to be interviewed on how they responded to direct warnings about safety in high-rise blocks from the Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade just weeks before the Grenfell disaster. James Wharton, a former junior minister and close ally of Boris Johnson, and Stephen Williams, a former Liberal Democrat junior minister, are also expected to give evidence in person. Over 3 months, the inquiry will turn the spotlight from the actions of combustible materials manufacturers and the consultants and builders involved in the council block's disastrous refurbishment to the government that pursued, lawyers for the bereaved claim, a political ideology which broke free from common sense and safety constraints. Michael Gove, the Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities, has already admitted the government failed people at Grenfell and told MPs that, on a couple of occasions, it had not necessarily appreciated the importance of fire safety and not necessarily done everything in the wake of the Laconnell House tragedy, a 2009 tower block fire where 6 people died, that it should have done. While the inquiry will look at the actions of governments going back to the 1990s, a principal context will be what David Cameron described in 2012 as his government's resolution to kill off the health and safety culture for good. The bereaved have called for David Cameron to give evidence to explain his policy, but the inquiry has not asked him to do so, and Lord Pickles will field important questions. Lord Pickles was David Cameron's cabinet minister in charge of building safety from 2010 to 2015 and will be asked why the government failed to overhaul fire regulation guidance despite an instruction to do so by the coroner on the Laconnell House fire. The inquiry has heard the ambiguity of the guidance, which remained in place at the time of the Grenfell disaster on 14th of June 2017, was a significant factor in allowing companies and consultants to use combustible materials. In one letter disclosed to the inquiry, Lord Pickles is shown assuring the coroner there would be a future review, but arguing fire protection in buildings is a complex subject and should remain to some extent in the realm of professionals. Lawyers for the bereaved have argued the government became the junior partner in a relationship with the house building industry, which allowed companies too much control over standards. In 2011, Pickles launched the Red Tape Challenge to slash bureaucracy facing business. In the budget that year, a new rule was introduced that required a waiver for any change to the building regulations. The inquiry will examine internal Whitehall documents showing how in 2015, a civil service briefing for the then Housing Minister, Lord Wharton, was explicit that the review had been postponed, while the department focused its attention on other priorities, including the red tape challenge. Anne Studd QC, counsel for the Mayor of London, has argued only lip service was paid to the commitment to the coroner to review the regulations. Pickles has so far told the inquiry in a statement he does not recall the potential industry use of combustible materials in external cladding systems was ever raised with me. Pickles is also likely to be questioned on his resistance to introducing sprinklers as a safety measure, which the Fire Brigade Union has told the inquiry would have saved lives at the Grenfell Tower. In October of 2013, when the Welsh Government made sprinklers mandatory for new-build homes, Pickles complained it had hit the housing market with extra red tape, adding £13,000 to the cost of building a new home. In fact, a government briefing note disclosed to the inquiry said that the amount was no more than £3,000. The inquiry may ask where he got his numbers from. In February 2014, Lewis, a junior minister under Pickles at the time, told Parliament that sprinklers work but referred to a 1-in-2-out rule as part of the coalition's red tape policy and said, in that context, we want to exhaust all non-regulatory options before we introduce any new regulations. Ministers were also likely to be asked about their dealings with Sir David Amess, the Tory backbencher who was killed in October. In 2014, Sir David Amess chaired the All-Party Parliamentary Fire Safety and Rescue Group, which was pressing Williams, the Housing Minister at the time, to get on with the building regulations review ordered after Laconnell House disaster. Penny Mordaunt, an undersecretary in the department at the time, told Sir David Amess that Williams had seen no evidence it was urgent and that he was not willing to disrupt the work of the department by getting on with it. The inquiry has heard this was chilling. Sir David Amess's group replied that it was at a loss to understand how independent evidence, which had life safety implications, was not urgent. It said, should a major fire tragedy with loss of life occur between now and 2017, where the matters which had been raised here were found to be contributory to the outcome, then the group would be bound to bring this to others' attention. Lord Barwell, Theresa May's former Chief of Staff, who held the office of Housing Minister in the year before the Grenfell disaster, is likely to face questioning over how he handled direct fire safety warnings from the London Fire Commissioner Danny Cotton. On 3rd of April 2017, Danny Cotton told Lord Barwell and Lewis, by that time policing and fire minister, of mounting evidence of issues of concern within residential buildings and in particular blocks of flats, about compartmentation and the impact on the policy of telling people to stay put in the event of a blaze. She said, we are also concerned about contractor competency and how this influences compartmentation deficiencies and therefore occupant safety. The inquiry has already found this was prescient, as the compartmentation failed catastrophically at the Grenfell Tower, partly because of poor workmanship and a stay-put policy was kept in place for too long, costing lives. A significant civil servant facing questioning will be Brian Martin, a former building control officer who rose to be senior advisor to ministers on building regulations. he's likely to be asked what he knew about companies bringing dangerous, non-compliant materials to the market by exploiting confusion and how the building regulations should be met. Michael Mansfield QC, representing some of the bereaved families, has alleged that Michael Martin took an attitude that was complacent and collusive with a dangerous, out-of-control industry. In July of 2014, Martin emailed a contact at the National House Building Council, which provided building control and warranty services for new-built homes, saying that reliable sources had been telling him that combustible foam insulation was being used in cladding on high-rise flats. He referred to polyisocranulate foam, the kind specified for Grenfell Tower that fueled the fire and released toxic gas, but all he said was, "The purpose of my email is a friendly warning. You might want to double-check with your inspectors that they are on top of this." The inquiry resumes on 24th of January.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, brothers and sisters, let's discuss the disadvantages of lying. There's no merit in lying. There are as many disadvantages in lying as there are advantages in truthfulness. Truthfulness is one of the most beautiful traits, and lying is one of the ugliest of them. And this is a universal fact. It's something no one can deny. Wherever you go, everyone, whether he lives in the West or in the East, accepts and approves of the fact that truthfulness is a beautiful trait. And he accepts the fact that lying is an ugly and a despicable act. You know, when a person lies, the tongue translates man's internal feelings to the outside. The tongue is always a tool. It translates. And what it translates could either be true or false. You know, the tongue is not to blame. It is the human that uses the tongue, the tool, either for a wrong purpose or for a right purpose. And what it translates could be true or false. If it is false, then it either stems from envy or enmity, or perhaps it stems from stinginess or other, you know, bad habits. The origin could be human anger, or it could be lust. Lying is forbidden no matter what the origin. You know, it is a despised act. It is a disgusting act that is forbidden under all circumstances. Of course, there are some very rare cases in which, for example, the religion may allow someone to lie, but the benefit of lying should be greater than the harm of lying. There are some very rare cases in which a person may be allowed to lie, you know. I'm not here to speak about lying from a jurisprudential point of view. Of course, we are speaking lying from a moral perspective. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues. ourselves, we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Lying is a filthy act. If man's tongue becomes poisoned with lying and its filth appears on him, its effects are like the effects of the autumn wind on the leaves of trees, you know. Lying extinguishes the light of man's existence, lights the fire of treachery in him. It has an amazing effect in terminating the ties of unity and harmony between men, and spreads hypocrisy. These are the disadvantages of lying. Someone who lies, he breaks his own bonds with his own brothers, with his own siblings, with his own parents, you know. A person who lies can never be trusted. As a matter of fact, a great deal of misguidance springs from false claims and empty words. People who make empty words, who make false claims, these are people who cannot be trusted. And these are people who are deemed, who are considered to be people with evil intentions. Because lying is an open door to help such people reach their selfish goals. They lie to conceal the facts behind their magical words, to deceive innocent people with their poisonous lies. Those who lie cease to be seen as trustworthy people in society. They cannot continue to interact with other people, because other people feel that they have been betrayed by them, which is why there is always a lack of trust between the liar and the other people and the other party. They have lost their credibility in the society and in the eye of their people. Liars have no time for themselves to think or reflect. They rarely think about the possible conclusions, claiming that no one will ever discover their secrets. They think as such. But the effect of lying is so visible on those people. The consequences of lying is nothing but disgrace. It is shame. It is failure. Those who lie have bad memories. They forget what they have said, what they have claimed, and what they have said to other people. They forget their promises. They forget their words, claiming and thinking that other people are also like them. One of the factors which spread this resentful trait and this despicable trait, which of course poisons social manners, is the saying, constructive lying is better than the painful truth. You know, some people think that, okay, they can lie because if lying is constructive, then it's better than the truth that's painful. But this justification does not become a license for some people to resort to lying. Even though this, you know, this claim has become a tool for some liars to justify their positions, to justify themselves, and many people actually resort to lying in order to justify their resentful lies, these people ignore what reason and jurisprudence say about this issue. Islam and reason command that if a Muslim's soul, honor, and essential belongings are endangered, it is his obligation to defend them by any means possible, including lying. It is a valid maxim that say necessities legalize the prohibited. When there is a greater evil, it's an evil that is greater than lying, then it is permissible to repel that greater evil by lying. And this is just an exception in the religion of Islam. Islam and morality, both of them accept that necessities legalize the prohibited. In other words, when there is a greater evil to be repelled, to be countered, it is permissible for a person to lie. But lying under this justification is absolutely forbidden. One should not use this excuse to lie wherever he can to justify the exercising of the freedom of speech, saying that, okay, I should have the freedom of speech, or I should have this or another reason to lie. Lying is forbidden, generally speaking, but under specific circumstances, it is permitted, but it does not become a license for people to lie. And no one can use of any justification to lie unless there is a valid, a very strong reason for lying. Just as I said, if there is, for example, a greater danger, a greater evil, then it is permissible to lie, but provided that the greater evil, the evil is greater than the evil of lying. And in that case, it would be permissible. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Just days into 2022, North Korea carried out a major weapons test. It launched a hypersonic missile this week, with North Korean media saying the projectile precisely hit its target at a distance of 700 kilometers. This was North Korea's second test of a hypersonic missile. Unlike ballistic missiles that fly up into outer space before returning to hit their targets with a somehow predictable trajectory, hypersonic weapons fly at lower altitudes and can achieve more than five times the speed of sound. Analysts say, however, the main feature of hypersonic weapons is not their speed, but their maneuverability makes them much harder to detect by radar. The North is currently part of a small group of countries, including the United States and China, in trying to develop hypersonic military technologies.
They have a plan. They have a plan that is public, there is no secret, is available. So they have several devices, several weapon range that they want to develop. And one category is the hypersonic one.
The latest test firing came days after North's leader Kim Jong-un pledged once again to boost Pyongyang's defenses. He said in a New Year's speech that Pyongyang would continue to strengthen its capabilities because the Korean Peninsula still faces an increasingly unstable military environment. North Korea tested different projectiles last year amid stalled talks with the United States and its southern neighbor. Under former U.S. President Donald Trump, America and North Korea came close to a conflict before a series of meetings between the two adversaries' presidents. The high-profile summits broke down with no agreement, making Trump's approach towards North Korea another one of his major failures. North Korea has been subjected to Western sanctions for decades. Its relationship with the U.S. and its southern neighbors, South Korea and Japan, both staunch American allies, has been fraught with tensions for a very long time. North Korea is grappling with economic sanctions and chronic food shortages. Pyongyang has suffered under sanctions, but it has somehow managed to withstand the American pressure campaign.
They manage to avoid any trouble to their economy in the same way that many other countries that are under sanctions are doing. So basically they readjust their economy in a way that they can survive.
Despite its long list of economic problems, the North has managed to produce several nuclear warheads, describing them as a necessary insurance against an attack by the U.S. The U.S., which has been calling on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons, has left no stone unturned to isolate the communist state. But successive U.S. administrations have failed to force North Korea into submission. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration now says it is open to talks, but the North says that's implausible given the record of American hostile policies. The North seems too weary of American ulterior motives. What if it abandons its atomic arms and the U.S. does not drop its hostile policies and keeps up the pressure? This must be one of the key questions that comes to the North Korean leader's mind when he focuses on his country's relationship with America. The North insists that the White House has been determined to take and reluctant to give during past talks. It remains to be seen how Biden will act now to try to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula.
A new report has warned about the rising threat of extremism in the United States. The report has been prepared by the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab. It says that 12 months after the attack on the Capitol by a pro-Trump mob, far-right groups were traced and arrested by police and federal authorities. But it says other groups have reorganized, often with an emphasis on local-level politics. It found that domestic extremist groups have recruited and spread their messages through culture war debates, including vaccines, race, and education. It says groups such as Proud Boys and QAnon conspiracy movement have re-emerged in recent months. They have made progress by shifting to alternative online platforms, embracing rhetoric to engage more broadly with the mainstream conservative base, and engaging in new political activities, particularly public health and education issues at the local level. The report says extremist movements were filled with paranoia following the Capitol riot. It notes that members are suspicious of each other and law enforcement. That has discouraged many members from attending public events.
They morph into different forms and formations, but they tend to follow the same basic tenets, which are white nationalism. So whether we're talking about the Ku Klux Klan or the White Citizens Council or the Oath Keepers, white Southern Baptists or neo-Nazis, the American history is replete with these types of organizations.
These extremist groups have adopted smaller and less sophisticated platforms, and that made them vulnerable to data scrapes, breaches, and hacks. The report warns of the rise of far-wing influencers inside these alternative social media platforms and the dangers that they could bring. Far-right figures like the former top Trump aide Stephen Bannon have encouraged a precinct-by-precinct strategy. It refers to a ground-up approach that focuses on local politics.
In 2022, Ronald Reagan's so-called shining city on the hill has become exposed as a mirage, as the poor, the elderly, and people of color are still fighting in 2022 for one person, one vote.
The report comes as the U.S. prepares to remember the first anniversary of the Capitol Hill riot. During the January 6th riot, thousands of supporters of former President Donald Trump attacked police, vandalized the Capitol, and sent members of Congress and then Vice President Mike Pence running for their lives. Democrats have been arguing that the riot on January 6th was an insurrection based on disinformation spread by Trump, who alleges that he is the true victor of the 2020 presidential election and not Joe Biden.
As an economic system, based on unbridled capitalism, the system eventually has to implode. The insatiable lust for markets, the insatiable lust for resources and profits cannot be sustained.
A new poll has found that 60% of Americans believe Trump's level of responsibility for the attack was either a great deal or a good amount. Trump is often cited by U.S. media as the one inciting his supporters to storm the Congress premises in the hope of overturning the election results. A committee tasked with investigating the events of the January 6th riot has issued dozens of subpoenas to Trump's current and former associates.
These folks are well-funded, they are very well organized, but I don't think that they are in large enough number to where they can really take over the government in the manner in which, you know, in terms of a civil war and that kind of thing. I think that's a bit rhetorical. I think that's a bit of hyperbole.
At least seven people died in the incident, including a police officer, and more than 700 have been arrested so far for crimes related to the breach.
Iranians have paid tribute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, two anti-terror icons who were assassinated in a U.S. drone strike at the Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020. People from all walks of life participated in ceremonies across Iran to mark the occasion. They called for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Addressing a gathering in the capital, Tehran, President Ebrahim Raisi said former U.S. President Donald Trump, who ordered the strike, must be put on trial.
The then U.S. President must be put on trial as an aggressor, murderer, and the main criminal. He must face divine retribution. If Trump, Pompeo, and other criminals are not tried in a fair court for their horrible crime and are not punished for their shameful acts, I tell all American statesmen, do not doubt, Muslims will take revenge.
Similar ceremonies were held in other countries too. People in Iraq, Yemen, Palestine, and Syria held vigils and paid tribute to the top generals.
So he's seen as someone who put the country first, who did whatever was necessary, whatever he was called to do for his country, he did. He was described by many as an unassuming man. He wasn't arrogant. And that led to his personal appeal. But he's seen as a great hero in Iran and the surrounding area, and his record in defending the country and in leading the troops in different areas, different times, and even in peacetime, being responsible for at least some of the military in Iran, has left the people with great memories of him and great respect for him.
In Lebanon, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement said the expulsion of all U.S. troops from the region will be the ultimate revenge for the assassination of Soleimani and Mohandas. Said Hassan Nasrallah hailed the two figures, saying they played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists in the region. Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the United Nations has urged the UN Security Council to hold the United States and the Israeli regime responsible for the assassination of Iran's anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani.
Given the dire implications of this terrorist act on international peace and security, the Security Council must live up to its charter-based responsibilities and hold the United States and the Israeli regime to account for planning, supporting, and committing the terrorist act. As I have on numerous occasions underlined, this internationally wrongful criminal act was a grave breach of the obligations of the United States under international law, and thus entails its international responsibilities.
Takravanchi stressed that General Soleimani played a significant role in combating international terrorism, calling his assassination a big gift and service to Daesh and other terrorist groups in the region. The Iranian diplomat noted that former head of the Israeli military intelligence, Major General Tamir Haiman, admitted last December that Tel Aviv was involved in the 2020 assassination and described it as one of the two significant and important targeted killings during his term.
The United States, unfortunately, has veto power in the Security Council and continually defends Israel from accountability for its many crimes against humanity and international war crimes and gross violations of human rights. So the fact that Israel was involved in the assassination of General Soleimani, which was ordered and carried out by the United States, is something the Security Council will never hold Israel responsible for.
The former official was apparently referring to Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, an Iranian nuclear scientist who was assassinated north of the capital Tehran in November 2020. Despite Iran's repeated calls on the international community to hold the perpetrators responsible for the dangerous adventurisms, neither the United Nations nor self-proclaimed promoters of human rights in the West have so far called for accountability or made any meaningful attempt to prevent similar attacks. Regardless, Iran has vowed to bring the perpetrators to justice and take revenge for the crimes they've committed.
Late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, was seen as a hero who stood up for the suppressed Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in Syria and Iraq, as well as other parts of West Asia. According to many Syrians and Iraqis, he was fearless, courageous, unselfish, and always present on the battlefield. General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against the U.S.-sponsored Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in West Asia. He was the strategic master of many battles against Takfiri terrorists in Syria. He played an important role in the liberation of the Christian-dominated regions from the grip of Takfiri terrorists in the country. Also, he had a great reputation in Iraq, where Daesh conquered large parts of the country. He managed to unite Sunni Kurds and Shia fighters in the battles against Takfiri terrorists. Therefore, for many Iraqis, he was a hero, like in Syria. General Soleimani was able to mark very important plans in line with providing regional security by preventing Daesh terrorists from overthrowing governments in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries.
Daesh was actually an American and Zionist creation in order to destroy a number of Muslim countries as well as give a horrible image to Islam, because Daesh terrorists indulged in horrific crimes against innocent people. And so that project that the imperialists and the Zionists had launched, we saw how they erupted in Iraq in July of 2014, and by 2017, they were wiped out through the efforts of martyr General Qasem Soleimani.
General Soleimani was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020, while on a trip to the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. This raises the question, why should Washington kill the man who fought the terrorists in West Asia most successfully? General Soleimani was a powerful, strategic mastermind who revealed the ugly face of Western interference in both Syria and Iraq. His assassination exposed the U.S.'s support for terrorist groups and Washington's lies of countering terrorism. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was loved by people of the region as a defender of the oppressed, protecting Christians, Muslims, and those of other religions. Western-sponsored terrorist groups such as Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra sought to promote an image of Islam that was false. These groups were created by the Israeli regime and America with the financial support of Saudi Arabia. And General Soleimani was the one who confronted these deviant groups in Iraq and Syria. He managed to help the oppressed. He tried to save women, men, and children in Iraq and Syria from the crimes of Takfiri terrorists, no matter what faith they were from. He united Muslims and Christians and people of other religions in the fight against terrorists and once and for all defeated them.
Well, Daesh's tactics included killing innocent people, kidnapping women and raping them, killing children and so on. These are things that have absolutely nothing to do with Islam. In fact, they are the very antithesis of the values of Islam that places a great premium on saving and protecting human life. So while Daesh and their backers were busy in killing innocent people, and with the deliberate policy, of course, of the imperialists and the Zionists to create a very violent and negative image of Islam, but the people, obviously, the targeted people, were horrified by their actions, whether it was in Iraq or in Syria.
Millions of people in Iran, Iraq, Syria, and the rest of the world attended the funeral of General Soleimani. This shows that he is beloved by the West Asian nations and all the free people of the world.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Technological change is accelerating today with robots and artificial intelligence making fast inroads into human lives. A consumer electronics show in Las Vegas is the latest example of the same. From lifelike baby dolls to full-grown human-like robots are on the display. They not only write, cry, laugh, and blink, but some of them speak and react when you tell them something. The most interesting thing about these robots is their reactions, which are just like humans, seeming as if they are real people. The robot makers say soon people will not be scared of these human-faced machines being among them.
Humans are so complex, so making a robot exactly like a human is almost impossible. If we did that, then you wouldn't be scared of it, because you'd just assume it's a human. But you get that uncanny valley just before, where it doesn't quite move like a human, doesn't quite express itself or emote or talk like a human. And that's the uncanny valley, that's the scary bit. If you go further back to something that looks less like a human, then suddenly you like it a lot more.
The robot makers hope that the way these robots are made would help even doctors how to treat and confront children, for instance. They also hope that by adding more human characteristics to these robots, the machines will be at the service of humans more than before. Let's see what's happening in one of the world's oldest festivals. It's called Black and White Carnival, celebrated every year in the Colombian city of Pasto. But it has a lot more than what its name may suggest. The carnival, full of vibrant colors and fun, livens up when people perform music too. Those in attendance even threw talcum powder and foam to add more doses of joy. More things to visit too. Colorful monuments and floats are brought to the streets. An artisan explains what's behind one of the huge sculptures exhibited there.
This commemorates what we are going through right now in the world. The virus, that little thing that brought COVID. We have skulls, people who died, those who are reborn, children, old people, and a lady. That's the whole motif. It's called rebirth.
The event has roots in Spanish and African traditions related to the indigenous people of Colombia. The carnival is aimed at highlighting the diversity of ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Its name symbolizes unity and equality. The festival continues until January the 10th. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in a Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction, mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats. Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is hosting, that is host to, a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remain true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and pass the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
We want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now we're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come, and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmaz for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games, and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. 5 horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Abora Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since. Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues. The school in Spain is offering students an opportunity to join a special orchestra. The project, dubbed The Music of Recycling, brings unwanted junk back to life by transforming them into musical instruments. And here is how they sound. The project offers the instruments to the orchestra in one of Madrid's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. The students say the orchestra keeps them away from mischief and out of serious trouble while giving them an artistic outlet. Several dozens of children are taking music classes from members of the orchestra as part of the project. The ensemble has put on several concerts across Spain, but because of the pandemic, they had to pause their performances. The project is run by a Spanish environmental group and is inspired by a similar orchestra in Paraguay. To most people, an eggshell is something that gets tossed in the garbage, but to one Chinese artist, the delicate eggshell is the chosen canvas to express art and create mini masterpieces. Zhu is a talented craftsman who has created a series of unique egg sculptures with the theme of Beijing's Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games. Icons of ice and snow sports, as well as etchings of the 2022 Olympic mascots, are showcased in this series. The thin and delicate texture of the shells adds to the difficulty of the craft, which creates a sense of fragile beauty. Zhu says his fascination with eggshell art started when he was very young.
The Christmas season is when people around the world left out a dose of joy in the form of Santas. But it's different in central Thailand on this Christmas Eve. Thai children were ecstatic to see Santa Claus's distributing presents, but this time in the shape of elephants. Dressed in Santa costumes, 5 elephants carried dolls, face masks, and sanitizers for students. They were surrounded by many human Santa Clauses as well. But the students cheered with joy while reaching out for presents from the jumbos. Event managers say their goal was to encourage students to stay vigilant during the pandemic, plus they wanted to give the children some fun to look forward after months of virtual classes. The event is a yearly highlight for a school that caters to students from kindergarten to secondary level.
IRIB English Radio.